welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 395. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Glenn Fox.
Howdy.
To usher in a slightly new era of the Pocket Gamer Podcast. Things be a-changing, Glenn. Can you feel it?
Oh, I can feel it, James. It's that buzzing thing in my skull, isn't it?
I think that might be your phone. I just sent you a message. It's that WhatsApp of that fox. You know,
I like
foxes.
He's so cute.
Oh. He is. He's adorable, isn't he? No, we are mixing up the format of the podcast this week and potentially for podcasts in future. Specifically, we're going to drop a few sections, add an important new section, and just tighten everything up a little bit. Now, if there are any thumbs up reactions to this, by all means, let us know. If you think maybe, oh, I like the old version, then A, tough. But B, no, not really tough. Then let us know as well, because obviously we're curious, we're interested in your feedback, and we're just trying to make it a better show for you guys to listen to. So we're going to be having an interview this week with a developer, who she'll reveal in a moment, and also just tighten up a couple of the other sections, and we'll drop the updates, because I'm not sure anyone actually cares anymore. Maybe you do. I don't know.
Sorry, one guy.
Well, the bottom line of all of it is that the information we discuss on the podcast all comes from PG anyway. So it's all there. The site's been optimized to use on mobiles. So if you visit PG on your iPad or on your iPhone, you get a different looking website. Frankly, a better looking website.
That's
much easier to navigate.
It couldn't be much harder.
The old one. We know that PG looks like a site from 2006. We know it's a source of frustration and shame for us. But things are in the works. We promise to make that improve. But the mobile version's there, and it's got all the deets on it that you need to know about. So what we'll do to christen the new format is dive straight into the news. Oceanhorn 2 is on its way to mobile. We have got the first look at the game in action, 15 minutes of it, in fact, in a video that's up on the site. And it's sort of following the Zelda path in terms of the way that it looks versus the way it used to. How would you describe the jump between Oceanhorn 1 and 2, Glenn?
Beautiful. That's all that needs to be said, really. You're right. It's quite clear that they've sort of borrowed from a lot of Zelda games, and quite interestingly, it seems they've borrowed a bit from Breath of the Wild, even though it's just launched.
It's got a bit of that in it. It also feels to me a lot like Twilight Princess and the games that appeared on the Wii. So, whereas the first Oceanhorn was a top-down, locked camera, isometric style thing, which possibly had more in common with those 3DS versions of Zelda, Spirit Tracks and stuff like that. This new one is much more third person, camera follows behind the lead character, and so as a result looks more like Twilight Princess and the Wii versions.
Hmm. Yeah, it's got a bit of the, you can manually aim your gun. Actually, there are guns now, I should say that. You can craft stuff. I saw him climbing up a cliff, which is cool. So it does have a lot of sort of the new stuff that was added in Breath of the Wild in it, which is nice.
It is, and the first one was successful on mobile, certainly, and got a lot of critical acclaim. It later came onto consoles, and perhaps people went, oh, don't need this, we've got Zelda on consoles. But it's certainly got enough interest to justify the sequel, and we've got to say, I've been watching the video, it looks nice, I kind of want to give it a go. We discussed it when it first came out, that we were a little bit disappointed in some ways, that the studio clearly have an incredible amount of talent, but they were cribbing so hard from Zelda that it was like, all right, this is great, but we'd love to see you do something that maybe was completely original.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't think they've gone down that route. They've brought it closer to Zelda, if anything, but to be honest, I don't see it as a massive issue. I'm kind of... You know, obviously, different people feel different ways, but I kind of always been a bit resistant to the idea of, clones, if you want to call it that, or just games heavily inspired by others, because it kind of gives the main franchises sometimes a bit of a shot up the bottom, you've got to kind of step up and do better next time because this little clone's come along and done what you did just as well as you did it. I don't think Oceanhorn is one of those, but it's still up for what it is and what it offers on mobile. It's pretty great.
Well, the sequel is using Unreal Engine 4, not Unity like everyone else's. And it genuinely looks quite something. Check out the video that's up on PG. There's a full 15 minutes of it. We don't have a release date, but we wouldn't be surprised if it turns up end of this year, early next year at the latest, we reckon. So eyes peeled for that. Speaking of games that look like Zelda, Zelda on mobile.
What?
Yeah, I know, right? The Pretenders may be in trouble. Oceanhorn may be short-lived. The reason Oceanhorn was kind of popular was because you couldn't get Zelda on mobile. And if the rumours in the Wall Street Journal are to be believed, Zelda is on its way to mobile and should be turning up at the end of this year.
Wow. How do you think it'll play?
Well, we were investigating this because we've had Super Mario Run, and they took the platforming format of Mario and they turned it into an auto-runner. Platforming auto-runner. Which made sense. Like, I did a feature thing video on it, you can see it on AppSpy, but, like, you say what you want about, like, auto-runners being all over the place and, you know, there's too many of them on mobile. It suits Mario. It really worked. And I think the level design was very clever. I don't think people gave Super Mario Run enough credit. It's actually a very smart game, and the level design is really well, you know, really considered in that lovely Nintendo way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
So it fits. Then you got onto Fire Emblem, which again took the turn-based strategy thing and made it turn-based strategy light on mobile, which again, that works on touchscreen. Zelda, there's a lot to choose from, because Zelda's existed in 8-bit top-down, existed in like the isometric stuff we talked about with Oceanhorn, it's existed in the third-person perspective, like Twilight Princess, it's now an open-world third-person game with Breath of the Wild. Like, it could be anything.
That's true.
But what would you like to see?
Okay, you know when they were developing Breath of the Wild, they made the game in Zelda 1's style. Did you hear about this?
Yes, they mapped it all out to look like the 8-bit one, to work out where everything was.
They had all the crafting system and everything, but just literally in Legend of Zelda 1's visuals. And I want it to be that, or just a spruced up version of that.
Okay.
Because I can't see, you know, that's already made. They might as well throw it out there. Everyone wants to play it.
Would that undermine Breath of the Wild if you could just play it in 8-bit format?
I mean, like, at the end of the day, if you like that style of gameplay, you're going to go, oh, cool, this is fun. And then they're going to go, I'm going to get a Switch, and I'm going to play the actual 3D version of this. Offer little bite-sized versions of what's in the main console, hoping that people go, this is good, I like this, I'm going to get the thing that lets me play more of this. So, I don't think it undermines it. I think it's something different, but it also gives you that nice... What I'm trying to say, James... in the worst way possible, is that it's Breath of the Wild, but it's not.
Right.
And it's a little version of it.
I wouldn't mind seeing something like that. I think that might be a little bit ambitious.
Yep.
I can't help but feel it's going to be a snacky, bite-sized version of this kind of game. If it follows the same pattern that they have used so far with their mobile ports, I wouldn't be surprised if it was similar to the top-down, you know, 8-bit or more likely 16-bit look of Link to the Past or something like that.
Yeah.
The more cartoony version of it, perhaps, say more in line with Spirit Tracks or something. But available on touchscreens, smaller levels, smaller dungeons, everything, you know, trimmed right down to make it a little bit light and more accessible. Because if they do come out with a match 3 puzzle or something like that, the outrage, Glenn.
Yeah. Ooh, oh god.
It will be palpable.
It will. I was literally going to use that word. Yeah. I mean, it'd be crazy. But they probably won't do that. I think that the only thing they could do that would probably be disappointing is if they went down a sort of, you know, that crossbow training game. If they went down that route again, then I think people would be a bit disappointed. But I just really hope it's that game. There's no story in that little 8-bit thing. It's just fun. But then how are they going to monetize it? Oh god, they need to monetize it.
It's a minefield. Well, they went premium with Mario in the full, like, £8-9, and they went free with Fire Emblem, so they've tried both. I don't know which one was more successful.
I think it was Fire Emblem, actually.
Yeah, so maybe they will have to find a way to make it free-to-play. How do you free-to-play Zelda? Oh, God! Because when you're talking about these kind of huge gaming icons, something like Zelda and the amount of respect it has, as soon as you go, like, that's free-to-play Zelda, people are going to go...
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to me, James. Just sell the heart packs and stuff like that. Sell potions and arrows.
Pay to win Zelda.
Yeah. Oof. I'm definitely joking, by the way. I actually felt a bit sick at saying that.
you're making yourself ill. You're already hurting yourself with this, Glenn.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, we'll definitely keep you informed as soon as we hear any news on that. One thing that definitely has happened, however, is Guns of Boom has arrived on iPhone, on iPad, and on Google Play. We spoke to one of the game's designers, Anatoly from Game Insight, earlier on today, and we're going to include that bit of interview audio now for your listening pleasure. We are lucky enough to be joined by Anatoly from Game Insight, one of the developers of Guns of Boom, which is a multiplayer shooter that has taken the PG office, particularly you, Glenn,
yeah,
by storm. Welcome, Anatoly. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, it's good to be on the show. Hi, James.
So what we're interested to know is, firstly, a multiplayer shooter, there are quite a few of those around at the moment. Overwatch has been huge over on PC, and obviously historically you've got things like your Counter-Strikes and Team Fortresses, and there are a few challenges that appear when you try and make these things, especially when you're making them for mobile. Now, if I'm right, Guns of Boom didn't start out as a mobile game, did it?
Yes, it started as a PC game, as a PC idea to create a really accessible shooter out there. And we went through that phase for almost a year building a game that you could play with friends, and all of us are really avid gamers. So we wanted to build something that we could just play between work breaks while building different games. It's a fast pace, something like along the lines of Quake 1 or Quake 2, 4-on-4. You could hop into the game, you get a notification that four of your friends are online. So you just hop in, spend 5 minutes on each map. Not like Counter-Strike, where you spend maybe 20 minutes per session, or Overwatch or Team Fortress, where games might be much longer. But this had a real hard limit of 3 to 5 minute maps. And eventually we just played through this. Like in 2 months, we were like done. It didn't matter that we had new gameplay modes on PC. We just felt that anything exactly like Overwatch or Counter-Strike is a logical step for a player after they play our game. So we thought, let's do it for mobile, because in mobiles, those 3-5 minute sessions is exactly something that you're looking for. And instead of switching to Overwatch, you'd just be playing on mobile.
We've often talked about on the podcast the way that you need those quick restarts and those short play windows for mobile games. I mean, things like Clash Royale work so well because they have that 3 minute slot and then, you know, an extra minute at the end if you haven't destroyed your opponent yet. And it works perfectly for the pick up, put down, high speed lives that we all live nowadays. Glenn, you've been playing this a bunch since yesterday you picked it up. How long have you put into it now?
4 hours.
Good work. I say work. Do you used to work? Now not so much.
Before Guns of Boom came along, I was actually quite productive, but not recently.
Well, the big criticisms I've always had, and people who listen to the podcast will know me banging on about this all the time, is getting a first-person control system to work on a touchscreen, I've always felt, is an exercise in compromise, and one that doesn't always pay off. I've played it. We've all played this. This is actually pretty good. I know the reason why I think it's quite good. What were the challenges for you getting a first-person control system to work on a touchscreen?
This was really tricky. We were just lucky that the base game that we've originally built was really simplistic. It didn't have really any super fancy extra buttons that you have to press. You don't need to jump. You don't need to switch stances. You don't need to crouch. So without all of that, we were really down to the super bare bones shooter where you just aim and shoot. And once we went from like full PC controls out there to a very smooth, a very simplistic gameplay experience where auto aim and auto shoot mode is on by default for all players, you have this fair level playing field, or if I could say that, when everyone's in the same boat with super simplistic controls. And first of all, yeah, it's really easy to start. That's the most important one. You just give this to the hands of a very skeptical person that says, well, mobile first person shooters, how that's supposed to work. I think that mobile shooters are going through this phase of acceptance after a long denial. If you remember the early days of DualShock, PlayStation 2, and the very first-person shooter that you could play on TV with your friends, everyone was skeptical at first as well. And I think it took an aha moment with Halo and Xbox Live. Okay, you could actually play that on TV with X number of players, and this controller just works so well. So with Guns of Boom, we really hope that we've managed to get this equilibrium of accessibility, quick gameplay sessions, right, that you just hop in. You don't have to think about too many buttons on the screen. And for some reason that we are super excited about, it just works.
I think the streamlining is the thing that works for me, or that makes it feel more comfortable, because I agree that the problem with a lot of mobile games is you end up with a lot of touchscreen buttons, a massive, messy GUI, which is just covering the screen with stuff, so you can't actually see what's going on in the game. And of course, you've only got two thumbs at any one time, so you don't have the access to the rest of your fingers to, you know, pull a trigger or whatever you might need to do. And by not having the jump, not having the crouch, and having it auto-fire when you hold the reticle over an enemy, which is a common thing now on a lot of first-person shooters on mobile, but still, it does make it feel a bit more comfortable. Also, I don't think it's, like, you don't run around too fast. The players don't move at light speed. And for me, again, it just adds to the ability to feel like you're in control of your character a bit more. How did you find it compared to other ones, Glenn?
I'd compare it sort of to Halo and what that did on Xbox when it was trying to make FPS work on consoles. It slowed the game down, like you say, James, in the sense that it takes, like, you know, something like 18 bullets to kill someone. So what you've got to do is shoot at them, then slowly start aiming for the head. There definitely is an element of skill in it. And also, I praise the fact that a lot of actions have sort of been automated. I thought that would probably be the death of shooters on mobile, you know, if you don't have to actually do anything.
Well, like pull a trigger to fire and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of skill involved in it. Like, I don't know how the knifing system works, because I've been running into people and sometimes knifing them, sometimes not. So I could just be accidentally pressing the button. But I feel like a lot of the actions in the game are sort of taken care of for you. But it doesn't seem to take away from the skill level, which is something I've found really impressive.
How does the melee combat work, actually? Because I noticed that happening. I wasn't sure whether I was supposed to press a button or what.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, when you stumble onto a person, a knife button appears, and you need to be really quick to tap that. So it's really prominent by the right thumb. It's really easy to press. But sometimes your opponent could just drift away by half a meter, so that button just disappears straight from your thumb. You have to be really quick about that. That's one of the pro tips out there.
I notice what you've gone for is a 4-on-4 team shooter, but you haven't gone the class route, like something like Overwatch or Team Fortress. Was there ever a thought behind maybe going with healing classes and tanks and whatnot, or was it always that we're going to keep everybody equal and just let them fight it out?
Well, the early tests, we've tried forcing players to get into the match by picking up very specific weapons and kind of self-defining the classes. So you'd be super slow if you pick up a really heavy weapon out there. And it turned out that when the matchmaking and when the number of friends online or the number of enemies online, the structure of the battle could become really messy. Like, you're matchmaked against 4 snipers. And that's not a really good experience even for 3 or 5 minutes. So everyone was just begging from players, like, let us switch the weapons. So we went straight from the create your own class to feel free to pick up weapons, and kind of, it's really up to you to figure out which weapon do you need. So that's somewhat closer to Counter-Strike, where you feel the balance of the weapon and you know that, okay, this one's slower, this one's quicker. And that kind of defines you in a battle as a class, but you're free to switch around.
One of the big problems that you encounter with mobile multiplayer games is the connection. So while people might be at home and playing on a relatively secure Wi-Fi, some people are out and about or playing on 3G or 4G, and people dropping in and out of games, lobbies collapsing is a very, very common thing that we've experienced a lot when trying to do multiplayer nights here. How do you combat that in a game that is based entirely on multiplayer action?
Clash Royale just defined the era for everyone. Like, you could build a real-time game that works well for 3 to 5 minutes, and if something happens to the session, it's really quick to reconnect. So the part of the game that you've mentioned that it's not a super quick action-paced thing out there. Not too many things happen at the same time, but since the maps are somewhat small, you get straight into the action. So that lets us to create an experience which is very minimalist and works well on mobile. The speeds, that lets players have this still somewhat great pace, but it just works so well on mobile.
Glenn, you've been playing for a while, and you say you've spent money on it. Actual human money. Is that right?
Yeah. This is like Gameaholics Anonymous, isn't it?
This is your intervention, Glenn, yes. We got the maker of the game in to cure you.
It's fair.
But I'm curious, because it's obviously a free-to-play game, as most of these multiplayers have to be, in order to get the player base in there, enough players in to make it sustainable. So when it comes to creating the right balance of free-to-play, easy access for everyone, but also making some money off of some premium content, how do you balance, A, people being able to pay to win, the age-old question, are people just buying massive guns and kicking everyone's ass? And was that difficult to try and find the right balance?
Yeah, let's take a step back. And back in 2001, I've been really hardcore Quake 2, CTF Quake 3 player. And recently, I've spent like 500 hours playing Team Fortress 2 and just started playing Quake Champions. So having a really fair playing field for players has been a really important goal for us. You have to matchmake players with the same classes of weapons and the same upgrade levels. You have to have enough players online for that. And it's been a real goal for us to make sure this is going to be the esports game you want to play. It's really easy to pick up, but still it's not only highly competitive, but it's really fair. That's why the limitations that we've set here for players joining the match, such as full limits on the number of grenades and number of steam packs and med kits, it's there in place just so you couldn't really do crazy things and just run around. Compared to other games where you could just tap on a grenade button and buy more of those. So that has been a really crucial point for us to preserve the fairness of the play. And if you just run out of grenades between matches, you could just complete quests and achievements and grind through that. But once you enter the match, it's the same fair field for everyone. And that's kind of our commitment. Once we'll start rolling out the new gameplay modes, our players need to know that we won't screw this up.
What have you thought about the rise in interest in esports on mobile? For example, Apple really got behind Vainglory when it first came out, and that's kind of become an esport, quite a popular one in its own right. And this year and last year, we've had the Clash Royale tournaments with millions of dollars up for prizes. Do you think mobile is the next step for esports?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think so. And those titles that you've mentioned, I've played a lot of Clash Royale. I spend a lot of money on that as well. It's such a competitive game. I kind of think that esports will get the new breath once the new parts of game genres will be unlocked. Something super accessible. If you look at a game like Golf Clash, for example, it just brings esports to millions of non-gamers. I think gaming on the go with those quick sessions is the next big trend. So now it's all about the platforms to build up an ESL-like or tournament-like experience that will make it really easy for everyone to enroll and go through those tournaments. And once esports starts to scale out from millions or tens of millions of players to hundreds of millions of players, it's going to be a huge logistical nightmare. So I think that those leagues will have to accommodate so many more games and so many more players. It's going to be really big. But then again, how many games could you broadcast on ESL or Twitch at the same time? So we'll definitely have some winners and losers there.
When I'm running around murdering everyone, which is what I tend to do, I sort of run out of ammo in a lot of guns. And I was kind of hoping there'd be a way to sort of collect ammo from guns lying on the ground, especially if it's the same gun you're holding. Is that something you guys tried to implement and didn't work out, or is it something you're thinking of doing in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. Once we went into that endless exchange of ammo between players, you just run into so many problems of the game stopping being fun at some moment and just becoming an endless 5-minute slaughter session. And that's where we have originally started, as most of our guns either had unlimited ammo or too much ammo. So that didn't really add to the feeling of having an actual esports game where after a certain moment of time, like 3 minutes into the match, you start losing for some reason. That's the skill part in the game out there, where you have to start feeling the enemy, start making sure that you have enough ammo once you get into the brawl with three or four enemies at the same time on the screen. Because without that, you could just ravage through two opponents, pick up the ammo, and keep doing that.
Do you think health packs and grenades, you're sort of charging for them, do you think that might break balance of the game?
Well, this is the only part that we've got there that limits a player from playing 24/7. We've got the free crates, and you could just grab those free packs of hand grenades, free packs of health kits and gun bucks every few hours, so you could watch the video to get more of them. And that's more than enough to go through a couple of gameplay sessions in a row. It's your choice to whether to accumulate that and just logging into the game without playing and just collect enough packs to have, let's say, 5 or 6 sessions of the game in a row, or actually buy them. We still think it's kind of soft. Too many games just go beyond that and let you do crazy things in the game. So from our perspective, this is a really fine solution for players and us. It's a balance between being super greedy and having an actual monetization in place.
What's the next addition? What are you working on right now for the game?
The next gameplay mode, which is coming, is going to be called Control Points. And Control Points is going to look like, well, somewhat like Overwatch. You're going to secure a few points here and there. And once you dominate them and get enough points, you'll eventually win. And aside from that, also we have a roadmap of great gameplay modes of King of the Hill, Escort. If you've played Team Fortress 2, where you need to drag a cart from one part of the screen to another. So both teams are trying to push a cart around, and whoever pushes it further wins. So we're going to have many new gameplay modes coming in the upcoming months, and that's going to ensure that players who stick around will enjoy playing that more and more. And as an avid Team Fortress 2 player, I just enjoy playing all the new maps and going through all the new gameplay modes. So we really hope to bring that in a high quality fashion, and we're working full time on that to deliver this experience.
And finally from me, what are you working on next? You mentioned earlier on some talk of possibly a tower defense game. Is that what you're doing?
This game was just rolled out yesterday to 5 platforms. The game is called Survival Arena. It's a competitive PvP tower defense game. And if you like Field Runners, if you like Bloons TD, you should definitely try Survival Arena. And if you've played perhaps Warcraft 3, it had a great, amazing TD mod that was just so fun to play. We just spent hours and hours grinding through enemies and just securing the map. So this has been a huge inspiration for us.
Anatoly, thank you very much for joining us. Best of luck with the launch.
Thank you so much.
That was Anatoly there from Game Insight, and we're going to start out the out and about section with Guns of Boom. You've heard a lot about it already. All that remains really is to give our PG review, which was done by Ari, as usual, who, not really too surprisingly, liked it quite a lot, like you did, Glenn.
Yeah.
And like I did, if you watch my hands-on, which I did before any of this happened, you can hear surprise in my voice as I play it and have quite a good time.
Yeah.
Generally, everyone knows, I don't really like first-person shooters.
What, at all?
Well, no, on iOS. I love them, but I've always felt they handled, like we talked about in the interview, I always felt they handled a bit dodgily. But as we discussed, like, it seems to get the balance of speed versus sensitivity plus taking all the busyness away from the screen. Funny enough, you mentioned the fact that like earlier iterations of the game had a much more cluttered UI, and he's right, because I actually look back at one of the original Android soft launch release videos, and it does look quite different, and there's a lot more on screen. It looks much more like the traditional kind of FPSs covered with stuff that I tend to rally against.
Yeah, that's fair.
But this one, it doesn't seem to have that. What do you think it is that's made this different to you versus other first-person shooters?
Yeah, I mean, I've had the same experience you've had. I've always been of the mindset that sort of shooters, well, they were just never really going to work on mobile. But then, as I said, sort of in the interview, I feel like they had the same discussion back when console was, you know, becoming big and starting to beat PC, is that they were going, you know, probably shooter should work on console someday, and then Halo came along and you know, presented a way to do it. And I feel like Game Insight has kind of achieved a similar thing here. They've released a game that is a bit slower in pace than the PC shooters were back in the day, and it takes a little bit of a while to kill someone. But what that results in is it just, you have to focus more on shot placement rather than just, you know, like in Call of Duty, you don't really have to worry about where you shoot someone. You just have to get in first and hit them somewhere enough times and they die. You know, if you are an expert player, it does help to get a few headshots in, but it's not essential. Whereas in this one, when you have a one-on-one with another player, you're gonna have to get your shots in the head to walk away, or just use other tricks like throw a grenade at them. That's not hardly a trick. That's actually more of a just a viable strategy. But yeah, there's that. So I think the slow pace certainly helped. The graphics are really nice. There are lots of different actions in the game to take rather than just sort of pointing at an enemy and shooting at them. But they're also really easy. You just have to quickly move your thumb up the screen to tap on a grenade. But you can carry on shooting at the person while you do that, so it doesn't really break the game.
Yeah, that's true. And I found myself using grenades a lot more than I would do. You know how in some games you'll have these additional powers or abilities that you just forget about and never use?
Yep.
They'll just sit in the background and you go, oh yeah, I should have been using this the whole time, damn it. Whereas with this, it's just like Medipack and grenades, and I found myself lobbing grenades all over the shop with reckless abandon, which is quite entertaining.
Yes, it's really fun, isn't it?
So yeah, I mean, we covered it pretty comprehensively, but we liked it. Harry gave it a 9 out of 10, describing it as possibly mobile's first essential shooter. How about that?
It's a bold statement, isn't it?
It is a bold statement, a high recommendation indeed there for PG. For Guns of Boom, maybe you can go and check that out. The other big release for the week, I guess, is Old Man's Journey, which we've been covering for a while, and Emily of this podcast has been looking forward to this eagerly for some time since she met the developer. If you're not familiar with it, it is a sort of point-and-click adventure following the exploits of an old man who's wandering around the landscape, going through villages and cities and riding train tracks with just a knapsack on his back. And occasionally he'll sit down on a bench, look at a cat, check out the trees, have a wee think, and remember a memory from his distant past, and then he'll move on again. Which all sounds very sort of sedate and dreamy and slow, and it is, but in a really nice way. It's deliberately supposed to be this relaxed, sort of thoughtful, slightly emotional little experience that you gently wander through, and you enjoy the beautiful artwork, and you get lost in the ambience of it all, and you occasionally feel a feeling. Remember feelings?
I'm quite partial to a feeling every once in a while.
I've had them before, once or twice, but then I just, you know, years of first-person shooters where you just shoot people in the face made me numb. But no, this one, it does communicate that really well. It's not tough, by which I mean it's very easy. So the way that the puzzle aspect of the game works, because there is a game here, is you move around areas in the environment. We've talked about it with them in the past, but the places you can wander around, it's basically presented like a series of hills. It's a 2D adventure, and you can see kind of hills in the foreground and in the background. But what you do is you grab the line of the hill. So if you're looking at a hill drawn on the screen, it's just an arc. You literally put your finger on the arc, and then you can pull the mountain down or push it up, like you're terraforming with your finger. And the idea is you need to bring the mountain line in line with the mountain that you're standing on in the foreground. And when the two lines touch one another, you can kind of walk from the foreground to the background. So it's about moving everything around to create a path through the game.
Kind of sounds like doesn't it sound a bit like a children's pop-up book? No? Maybe I read some odd ones.
Yeah, and I never had to do that in a kid's pop-up book. But but even with those challenges, it's fairly easy to understand what you're doing, but it's not really about the difficulty. It's trying to, like, you know, share a feeling and explain an emotional journey. And I think it does that really, really well. It's not long. It's not tough. You need to know what you're getting yourself in for. It's like an anti-action game, is how I sort of described it. It is the antidote to all of the shooting and the banging and the quick-paced nonsense. So it's literally an old man going for a walk. So be warned before you go and get it. But if you are up for that, if that sounds like a nice thing you want to experience, it's really good. So I'd recommend it entirely. Old Man's Journey is the name, and that's out on all the platforms right now. This isn't brand new, but you did a review for it this week. So Human Resource Machine appeared on Switch.
It did a few weeks ago, but we got around to reviewing it a little bit late because just sort of been backed up with so many review requests because there's lots of stuff coming to Switch. But yeah, I've had a little bit of a play of it in the past week or so, and the experience holds up quite well.
Because it's been out on iOS and other platforms for a while, and it's now come onto Switch. How does it differ? It's cheaper on iOS still, but like, are there any benefits to playing it on the Switch, or are there negatives?
That's a good question. The way I sort of approached it in the review was, if you can play it on another platform, go for that version. Because the reason for that is both versions that you can play, because you can play it on the TV and you can play it in handheld mode, both quite mm-hmm. different experiences, and they just don't feel quite as good as just touching your finger on the screen. So, okay. And the reason for that is, when you're playing in docked mode, you're using the right Joy-Con as a Wiimote style wand, right?
Right.
Which is awesome, and it does work almost as well as the Wiimote, but it's just a little bit inaccurate compared to just literally tapping your finger on the screen. And the touchscreen version in handheld mode is just as good as playing on your mobile phone, but you've got to kind of disconnect the Joy-Cons from the tablet section itself. And the tablet
to
section...
comfortably reach it, yeah, I assume.
Exactly.
Otherwise your thumbs aren't going to get to the middle of the screen.
Yeah, exactly. But then you've got those hinges digging into your hands. Like, it's very much a sort of like... what's the word? I'm very much being nitpicky here, but
okay.
You know, just being perfectly honest, like, I've been playing it on the Switch, but I've just been sat there going, if I'm going to actually dig into this properly, I'm probably going to be getting it on my mobile. And it's also a lot cheaper on iOS and Android as well.
Okay. All right, and so if you've only got a Switch to play it on, then cool, because it is still a great game.
Yeah,
that we
definitely
really
play it if you've only got a Switch, definitely.
Okay, but if not, maybe go for the mobile version. The other thing that has come out that we haven't played yet, but I saw this, we were discussing this earlier, years ago. I think when I went to E3 or Gamescom like 3-4 years back, I saw this. Chroma Squad has finally arrived. It's kind of like, well, the idea is it's like team-based combat, right? And what they would call studio management. is it like you're making a TV show? But the TV show is kind of Power Rangers. So yeah. It's the idea is you're supposed to be making your own Power Rangers with these characters, and you do battle with these characters, but the game is aware that they're not really fighting. You're doing it as a TV show, and as a result, you have to deal with the studio and hiring staff and buying better equipment and stuff like that. And then when you start recording the show, you have to start fighting like you are actually in the show, which is a weird thing. And you need to see the videos and the game running to explain it. I played it when they were demoing it on the shop floor. It was so long ago. I wouldn't even like to think if it was the same, if it's remotely the same now as it was then. But it's out and it's $4.99 or $4.99. And we're going to have to review it and give it a go before we take any further. But it was everyone was flocking around it when I was at it, the conference, because I think it captured everyone's imagination for just being weird, but in a cool-looking way. So, Chroma Squad, it's out, but check back with PG and AppSpy for the written and video reviews. And there we have the new, slightly improved, inverted commas, and hopefully slightly slimmer, PokéGamer podcast. I feel scared, Glenn. Change frightens me.
Yeah, it's horrible, isn't it? Should we just go back to normal next week?
No, we're going to see this through.
Okay, fine.
If you like the changes this week, let us know. Give us ratings on iTunes. I never really ask for this, and I should, because it pushes you up the App Store and it makes us able to do the podcast and spend more time on it. Otherwise, we can't spend any time on it and get good reviews, because it's not worth it as far as upper management is concerned.
Oh, yes.
So if you want to carry on hearing stuff, give us the little rating on iTunes. That would be really lovely. We know iTunes sucks, but it's not our fault. just if you could do it, cheers.
We'd like that. And also, like, if we're going to do shameful plugs and stuff, can you please join the App Army? It's on Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Go join the App Army, which is free to join, and you get free games before they're even released on mobile. Yes. How about that? That's pretty sweet. So go check out all that stuff, and obviously subscribe to AppSpy's YouTube channel and PG, because they're both the bestest for your mobile users.
They literally are.
Thank you for listening. Come and join us next week for more Pocket Gamer podcasting.